good evening. Welcome to New Horizons. Welcome back to Simon Parks with The Alien Agenda, What They Don't Want You to Know. Simon grew up in a family with intimate links to MI5 and MI6 and was privy to quite startling information regarding our association with strange craft and possibly their inhabitants. Our association in this instance refers to certain government departments, probably the military. Simon's research indicates high-level secrecy around this subject. Maybe this is for our benefit. Let's find out. Please welcome Simon Parks.
Thank you, Rob. Where's the white line there? Right, good evening, everybody. I'm delighted to be invited back. For those of you who saw me the first time, I discussed the Illuminati, and tonight we're going to look at the alien side of it. Can I just have a show of hands, who was present for my first talk? About nine out of 12, or 75%. Thank you. So thank you very much for inviting me back. For those who don't know, I am an elected politician. And when you are elected, because people presumably like what you say. Yeah. After 4 years or 5 years, you stand again and you're either re-elected or not. And it's actually better when you are re-elected because you are being judged. So although I was really grateful that I was invited here in October to speak, I've been invited back. That means the audience liked what they heard. So for me to be invited back a second time is actually more important than being invited the first time. Okay, I'm elected local councillor. I was an elected Labour councillor in London and escaped from London in 1999. Moved to Whitby and decided, having worn the T-shirt, I wasn't going to do it again. And local people came to me and said, certain issues, can you join back in? So I did, and I was re-elected. So I'm back as a local councillor. Being a driving instructor for a job for a number of years. When I was in London, I was an auxiliary lecturer at the Natural History Museum. Worked for local authorities for most of my life. So an interesting way of mixing, perhaps, with both community and with the establishment. The last visit, I generally talked about the Illuminati. I explained about my mother working for MI5, my grandfather working for what became MI6, and her job. We'll touch a little bit on that because it's very difficult to say this is where the Illuminati finishes and this is where the aliens start. When I was just having a chat with Chrissy tonight, when I arrived here October of last year, and Sam will find this funny, the YMCA building where Probe holds was pointed out to me, and Chrissy said to me, that's the alien place. So I thought, right, we can't talk too much about aliens. So I'm not proposing to stand here tonight and regale you with one story after another of alien interaction. What I'd rather try and do is to give you some of that personal insight, because that's what makes it different, but to link it with how the earth is changing, how the people should be changing, try and make it relevant in that way, and try and do it in a way that it perhaps links in with the other things that you, your own personal research, your own personal interests, because tonight this is one piece of the jigsaw, and you guys have several pieces, and you are hopefully putting them together. I'm not one of these people that runs away, jumps in the car and flies off. I'm very happy to stand and talk to you. You know, it's about networking, it's about sharing experiences and ideas, and I'm more than happy to give you my email address. I try desperately to reply to every serious email I get. Sometimes I'm swamped, and if I don't get back to you, just resend it. It'll be that I've just missed it. Okay, that's enough of me and what we did last time. There are a number of views about UFOs. The first one is that All UFOs are human-made, came from the Nazi technology, and the whole idea of aliens is a psyop operation designed to throw people off the true scent where they are. There's another view which says some UFOs are human and some are made by aliens. View three, all UFOs are alien. And view four, there are no such thing as UFOs. That's actually the world that we live in. You either have a view on that, or maybe you don't have any view at all. Often I'd say, what actually will happen to make the majority believe? This is a very stable world. Now, you'll say, well, it's not stable because there are wars. Actually, that is part of stability. That's been built into the human psyche. So we live in a very, very stable and predictable world, and people who are not enlightened are quite happy with that world. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about aliens or fluoride in your water or medicines. They don't want to know. This is the world, they're happy with it. So it's a very, very difficult environment for anybody to try and wake anyone up. I'll give an example of a taxi driver. I did an interview in London and had a taxi ride. And the driver said to me, oh, I hear you're going to TV studios to talk about aliens. I said, yeah, that's right. So he said, well, when I was in my 20s, I was really interested. But you know what? When the government never said anything and nobody ever came out, I just lost interest. And that is the point, that people go through a phase in their life where they're open, their minds are open, and they'll challenge and they'll ask questions. But because officialdom isn't supplying any sort of answers, and they've got the rent to pay, the mortgage to pay, it just goes out. The only way that the majority of people will believe is when a gentleman in a suit goes on the major news and says, ladies and gentlemen, I have an announcement to make. Aliens are real. We're really sorry we didn't tell you before. But you know what? We thought you would be scared and panic. But it's real. That's the only thing that will make people believe. If you sat a spaceship for 4 days above every major city in the world, at the end of those 4 days, people would just shake their heads and said, oh, I must have had too much to drink. They are so conditioned, they wouldn't believe it. But they will believe somebody making an official announcement. Now, that's not going to happen easily, because the powers that be have no intention of making anything public. The only way they'll make it public is when they're dragged kicking and screaming to tell the truth. All right, let's make a list. Who can just shout out different sorts of aliens that you're aware of, either from the internet or personal experience? Greys, good. One. Sorry? Pleiadians, okay.
Nordics.
Reptilians. Human beings. Actually, we'll come back to that. Good point. You've done really well. But I noticed that most of the people in the front called out. Can somebody call out from the back? Name an alien race from the back. Thank you. 90% of them. Actually, Tony Blair was a member of the Illuminati and is a member of the Illuminati and is a Satanist. Right. What about human-bodied, but alien souls? This is your question. You asked me about humans, didn't you? What about humans, but have an alien soul? What's the terminology for that?
Hybrid.
Not bad. A hybrid actually is the body. We'll come on to that. I'm talking about a human body, but an alien soul. What about 5, 6, 7 years ago, it was quite popular. Do you remember walk-ins, star children? Okay, that's what we're talking about here. A human-type body, but with an alien soul.
Lord Carrington.
Ah, he's very interesting. All right, one question often asked is, what do aliens want? I'm often asked that question. And the problem is that the people who ask that assume there's one type of alien. If there was one type of alien, it would be so easy to answer that. Here's an analogy for you. Let's use a 3D world. You find some oil off some far-flung country. So you go to the Americans and you say, you know, you've got the ship big enough to get us out there to test the oil. Who's good at drilling? Oh, the Brits are good at drilling. We'll get the Brits in to do the drilling. Who's good at optics? Oh, the Germans are good at optics. We get the Germans in to do us the cameras. And what you've got is a group, different group of people, all coming together to actually carry out one job. And to a certain extent, with the alien agenda, that's exactly what you've got. So you've got what we call the reptilians, the mantids, the greys, some Nordics, who are all signed up to a set agenda. Somebody said Palladians, they're not signed up, that's a different agenda. So, to answer what the aliens want, specifically the question would be, what does this particular group want? But of course the people who ask that question don't really understand. How do they get here? Well, there are two ways that I'm aware of that you can get here. One is literally what we'd call extraterrestrial, we'll come on to that. That's that the tall whites, somebody mentioned the tall whites here. Charles Hall, who spoke at Probe on 2 years running, possibly, talked a lot about the tall whites. It takes the tall whites 20 years to get here. About 20 years, because they are using what I consider very, very primitive technology. And they are literally exactly the same as you. So they're not fourth dimensional. It takes them 20 years to get here, at about 2.5 to 3 times the speed of light. Others are a dimensional change, so fourth dimension. Some of the reptilians are fourth dimensional. So they will come here through a dimensional time space, and that won't take them more than just a few seconds. Think about it, if you were a living creature as you are, you really couldn't spend 50, 60, 70 years in a spaceship traveling from one place to another. So you have to either identify a system of speed or a system of time to get you to where you want. The other question they ask is, why don't they make themselves known? I'm always asked this by local BBC radio stations. And the answer is because they don't want to know. Because it would hamper what they're up to. If everybody was aware of them, nearly every American would arm himself or herself with a gun and hide under the stairs. Every defense force of the country would feel it was on a bound to do something, and it would just hamper the situation. Added to that, the elite, some of whom are working with some of these extraterrestrials or extra-dimensional entities, certainly don't want you to know, because if you know that, the next question is, what about the technology? And if aliens are real, then who in position of power knows about them? The answer is, every major government of the world has a number of people who are fully briefed and fully know it. Recently, again, the ex-minister for Canada, who was a defense minister, he's come back on to be public. So he was a minister of defense in a very large country who was fully aware of it. You have leaders of the CIA who know nothing. You'll have people in middle rank, like a major, who will know everything, and yet their general may know nothing. So it's called need to know.
The Canadian said
that he said that he was aware of 50-something races. But Canada and America don't get on. America does not share a great deal of information with Canada. He was aware of what had passed across his desk. So his own intelligence had told him that there were 50-some races. But if you took America, which is the hub of the spider's web of intelligence, that figure would be considerably larger. Or indeed, the Russians. Why don't they tell us about them? Well, they do. But they do it on their deathbed, when they can't be got, or their families can't be got. They'll do it when they've resigned. Or they'll do it like me, because I don't care. Extraterrestrial means literally a body, a biological body. So it's a biological body that has travelled here not very long. Like the tall whites, biological, male and female, and have children. An extra-dimensional entity is an entity from the fourth, fifth, sixth, go upwards dimension that has travelled here in a craft that has opened a portal and has dimensionally come through. And you often find lots and lots of people who suffer from radiation sickness, burns, is because when the craft is coming from one reality to another, There's a blast of energy, and if they're too near to the craft, that's when they'll describe they've got burns down their arms or their legs. And that's just shoddy, because whoever's piloting the craft hasn't done their work properly. An interdimensional entity is an entity that exists between the third and the fourth. I prefer the word jinn, but if you go back to the Dead Sea Scrolls, they're known as Velon. And these are beings that live literally between the two dimensions. And the Satanists, the Dark Illuminati, the Dark Magic Masters, are able to conjure these Denzians from the interdimensional space through to do their bidding. There's one gentleman here who knows his Bible very well. If you think back to the Old Testament, King Solomon had a jinn, and he called the jinn through with his iron ring, and the jinn helped him to build his palace. In the West, we don't seem to really take it seriously. We look at it on the same way as we would pixies and fairies. But in the East, it's a very serious. Those who've read their Quran, not only does it talk about the jinn, it tells you how to get rid of them.
What was the other word you used?
Velon.
And what was that?
Velon. Velon. That appears in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And we're talking about the same beings. They have afflicted humanity for thousands of years. Okay, abduction. Abduction is the taking of a person when that person has not given permission. The trouble is, on occasion, the person has given permission in the past and has completely forgotten about it. But in most cases, the person has not given permission. That is an abduction. A contact is when Alex Collier might be your classic contactee. This is when you are collected, sat down, given a nice cup of tea, and they'll tell you everything you want to know and then send you back. It's a nice, happy way. I'm not, you know, being silly. That's a big difference. Abduction usually ends up with you being experimented on, being harmed, and it being very unpleasant. I prefer to call myself an experiencer, because I am neither abducted nor in contact. I have a very clear memory in 1971 of making what researchers call a soul agreement. To me, it was just the bargain. 1971, I was offered a deal, and I said, yes, I'll have that. So, to me, it's not abduction, it's not contact, it's experience. Because also an experience can be something that happens in your front room. And we'll talk about that. Two ways to take a person. One is literally their physical body. You walk them out, you float them up, they go into a craft, and off you go. And the other way is an energetic take. Again, here in the West, we don't really understand it, but in the East, they do. Those who understand that you have a soul and your physical body is not really that important. You have an energetic overlay. That energetic overlay can be taken, and your body doesn't die, providing it's not taken for too long. So you can either be taken energetically or it can be taken physically. Physical, energetic. Mind projection. Many people can't tell the difference. An alien arrives in your front room and you think, oh, I'm in the Bahamas. No, you're not. You're in the front room. The creature's gone into your mind and is projecting into it. Now, it's easier. It's cheaper. It's less likely to be detected by the military. If a creature can come into your front room and give you an experience that you think you've been to Mars, but you haven't left anywhere, it's time efficient, and it solves a lot of problems. The thing is that most people can't tell the difference between when they really are taken or when the creature is interacting. And the sad thing is that a lot of researchers don't value that. Oh, it didn't happen. You weren't physically taken. It's rubbish. The creature came into the room, entered your mind. That is important. Missing time. The best thing I do is give you an example of missing time. I think that's the best thing to do. 2.5 years ago, went downstairs, midnight, couldn't sleep, and as I walk into the kitchen, I have a microwave and a digital clock on it. And the digital clock said 0.0. And I thought, that's odd, where's the other zero gone? Now, for those of you who understand this, then you'll know that immediately something's wrong, because generally when you're fully yourself, you question it. Oh, well, that's not right. I'll have to fix that in the morning. But when you say, oh, that's all right, don't worry about that, it's already starting. The interaction has already begun. And I made 2 pieces of toast and a hot chocolate, and I can remember putting the hot chocolate into the cup, boiling the kettle. I have no memory of pouring, at that time, the hot water into the hot chocolate. I do remember eating the toast. So it was midnight. The very next thing I can remember is I put my cup under the tap, washed it, put it onto the sideboard, and thought, that's odd, I don't normally do that. Oh, I should go to bed now. Turn around, 1:30. And I thought, that's not right. I haven't been here an hour and a half. And I sat down and I thought, this is something very wrong here. So I went into the sitting room and thought, I must try and understand what's happened. And within about 10 to 15 minutes, part of a memory came back. So that's a classic example of missing time. Objects out of place. I haven't seen this. This is my own personal thing. I'll give you an example of objects out of place. Less than 2 weeks ago, I was going to put stuff up in the loft, and I needed to get the ladder ready. So I love tea, made another cup of tea, and then had my tea, and then took the ladder to get up to the loft. And the next thing I know, I'm 2 landings up. Where's my tea? Oh, I don't know. Dan, where's my ladder? Why was my ladder on a different landing? Why was my teacup somewhere else? But there was no missing time, but it was objects out of place. So sometimes it isn't the time that alerts you to something's happened. It's what you were doing is wrong. So you might find yourself in a different room. When an abductee or a contactee says, well, I was taken and I was dropped back in the garden, that's somebody trying to hold up the program. So that's not missing time as such. When people get put back in the wrong clothes or the wrong room from an abduction, that is because generally the greys are trying to sabotage the program. I'm just talking about when you have a straightforward interaction, and 1 minute you were holding a kitchen utensil, and then the next minute you've got, you know, the jack for the motor car, and you can't work it out. So there's a difference between missing time and objects. Okay, there are 3 questions that the press corps are forbidden to ask the President of the United States at the weekly White House briefing, unless specifically authorized. One's Cuba, but there's an asterisk there. You're not allowed until recently to ask the President any question about Cuba, unless the press corps have been told prior to that. You're not allowed to ask about the National Security Agency of America, and you are not allowed to ask about UFOs or aliens. If any member of the press corps asks any of those questions, that press organization is banned for 3 to 6 months from coming back to the White House. Just at the end of last year, there was a lot of kickoff regarding the eavesdropping of the NSA on world leaders, and Obama said he would have a 1-hour press conference on the NSA, which members of the press could come and ask questions. Do you know not one member of the press asked a single question about the NSA? They asked everything but. And that just shows you how controlled they are. Right, when I do interviews for the American media, they always want to know, what do I think about Dr. Stephen Greer? It's so predictable. When I do something for the British, instead of asking insightful questions, they always want to know, what do I think about David Icke? And the big question is, why you? You know, why are you? You special? And you're thinking, you know, you're so backward, you're so primitive, you are so unawake, you are asking these sort of questions of me. What a waste of time. If you've got 15 minutes to interview somebody, try and interview them and get something interesting. Don't, to, you know, fuel your own wars. It's a prisonable offence in America to fraternise with an alien. Although, of course, aliens don't exist. Okay, somebody mentioned Palladian. Right, I'm a Palladian. Everybody wants to be a Palladian. Nobody wants to be a reptilian. Okay. We talked about a little bit about humans and souls. It's a prisonable offence in America to swim, fraternise, or touch a dolphin unless it's within state or federal approved oceanic centre. Now when you question that, they say, oh, it's about preserving them, protecting them. So yeah, but you can go and buy a 12-bore gun in America and go and shoot a moose. You don't do it for turtles. So the people in power know the very, very special nature of dolphins. Very special nature. Okay, moving on. You haven't had a single story about me yet. I hope your organisers will be happy. Right, shush, everyone, listen to me. I have something important to tell you. A UFO has crashed in the school playground. We are waiting for the police to tell us it's safe to go outside and take a look. When I came to visit you in October, we talked a little bit about this. That produced a flood of photos for me. Parents phoning me up, sending me emails, sending me pictures of school kids that they had surreptitiously taken throughout the land, and I'm going to share some of those with you. I used this picture, you may remember. Remember, UFOs don't exist, but the government pays schools to run dummy UFO crashes. And this is a school, and that's not an actor. They have a budget. They actually pay for police officers. They pay for the fire brigade and the ambulance to attend. This is why they need the money, because it's these people's time. So the police put a cordon around, and an actor, part of the companies who do these, dresses up in an NBC suit, nuclear biological suit, and pretends to look at the UFO crash. This is a school playground. And then he takes samples of the crashed UFO. I have blocked out their faces because it is illegal to show anybody under 18 their faces. So I've done that. But I wanted to show you, this is exactly what's going on in schools throughout England. In fact, in Wales as well. So here we are, there's genuine police officers, there's the cordon, the UFO crash is here, and the kids are all getting conditioned to understand and be ready for a UFO crash. Here's another one in another part of the country, a very tiny little thing there, but again, the cordon. Here's another one with fires. They've actually set fires, and this thing is supposed to have come into the ground and caused a great rift. There are the school kids coming out with their teacher, their class teacher. Here's another one. And then you can dress up and be a scientist and put on the suits and come and investigate the alien material. Here's another one, where there's a big crash site. But we talked about why. If UFOs and aliens don't exist, why would the system try and educate children? And it must be they're getting them ready for a false flag alien invasion. Getting them ready. These kids are 5, 6, 7 and 8. By the time they're 15, 16, 17, they'll be expecting it. Oh yeah, we did that in school. And the difference is that if it's a real UFO crash, you won't be allowed within a mile of it. But if the tape goes around it, and you can all hold hands and come and have a look at this, that's not real. And that's what they're being got ready for. This is interesting. Somebody did a little hard work for me. This is a nursery school. And it's a rug. When I was at school, you had to sit on chairs. But now, thank goodness, it's easier. So 3, 4, 5-year-olds sit on the rug with their class teacher and do whatever they have to do. And this is a rug. And a person I know very well spotted this rug and said, there's an alien on that rug. Oh. And said to the teacher, oh, when you get rid of that rug, can I have it? No, you can't have it. So anyway, they went back the next day. That's not true. Went back the next week, and the rug was getting ready to be thrown out. And this person very, very carefully took some pictures with their camera, because they're not allowed to do that. You can see the earth and series of children around the outside. If you look, I'm going to use a laser pointer. Here is a blue tub. This has been very strategically pressed against the other side to hide the alien. So my friend took a risk, lifted the edge, and took a picture for me, which is brilliant. That's his head. But if you look at the blue can, it's been used to push against it to hide it. So I was able to get the stock number for this. I phoned the company that made it and said, you know, I'd like one of those rugs. Because of who I am, that's not a problem. Fine. I said, well, could you just send me a picture of it? He said, well, you don't need that. You've got the stock number. I said, yeah, I know, but I'll have the picture. Sent it to me and it wasn't the right one. They'd replaced the alien with an Eskimo. And I said, actually, I want the other one. And the woman said, oh, you mean the alien? I said, yeah. She said, oh, it's a limited edition. We're not doing them now. We haven't got them. But at least we've got the pictures. So again, if aliens don't exist, why are 3, 4, and 5-year-olds being taught about, wait for it, it's called inclusion. They actually say it's inclusion. But why would you include something that doesn't exist? So when you look at them at 3, 4, and 5, sitting on a rug, and then at a later age range, looking at UFO crashes, you begin to see a discerning pattern here. Okay. Often I'm asked, where is the proof? Well, the proof is out there. It really is out there. Now, I'm not going to make any apologies for showing you that, because that is one of the greatest proofs. Whether you think it's a psyops or not, the fact of the matter is that somebody has got UFOs. We all know, but maybe you don't know, that Colonel Du Bois was actually Ramey's adjutant. And if you look at his face, I like this one, because if you look at Colonel Du Bois's face, you couldn't have a more guilty face. You're all familiar with this, I'm not going to time. You are, I'm sure, familiar with the telegram? Hands up? Not all of you. Okay. Roger Ramey got a telegram in his hand in 1947. Who would have thought that the software would come around that could read what was on that telegram? You wouldn't have imagined it. So Ramey's sitting there with a telegram in his hand, looking through loads of rubbish, pretending it's just rubbish, which it is, and he has a telegram, and of course stick it through a software reader and you get the truth. Again, I'm sure most of you are familiar with it. It basically says that they identify a disc craft which has crashed just west of the cordon, and it two things it calls them, the aviators, and the aviators of the disc, they are where they will go for, and the victims of the wreck. So here you have absolute proof that something happened. And a good friend of mine, a member of the military, was able to get hold of the lists for the flights in and out of a number of bases. And there certainly was a lot of wreckage that was flown out over a 2-day period. But people don't go and look anymore. They don't want to educate themselves. They're very happy in their own world. There is the proof. It is out there. So if aliens are real, the authorities could never cover it up this long. That's another question. How could you hide it? He did what he did for 50 years, and the establishment knew what he was doing, and they covered it up. So if they could cover up him for 50 years, then goodness me, they could cover up the fact of something much, much bigger, although not to those people and the families concerned, but from a global perspective, aliens coming here. So yes, they have a very clever means of keeping lids on things. Very quickly, want to widen this out now. Who was Wallace? Who could tell me who Wallace was? Who was Wallace to do with Charles Darwin? That's just brilliant, isn't it? Right, Charles Darwin's father was a 32nd degree Mason. The evolution of the species was an Illuminati program, dog eat dog, only the strong survive. So Darwin came from an incredibly wealthy background, very powerful. His dad was a 32nd degree Mason. Wallace worked with Darwin. Wallace actually helped him to come up with the theory of the evolution of species, but the point was that Wallace said evolution of species works really well for everything except people. Can't work with people. It's impossible. It just doesn't work. But Darwin, of course, his father was a very powerful man. So Wallace, you haven't even heard of him. He's jointly co-authored those books and was pushed out because it didn't suit the agenda. So the evolution of species is all about how the fittest survive, which is a very reptilian trait, is a very Illuminati trait. I've altered this because it's not quite right, but then I worked at the Natural History Museum, so I would alter it. It's talking about the missing link. We all joke about the missing link, but very few of us actually understand what it means. It means that there's absolutely no fossil record to show real humans evolving from a more ape-like creature. But we're told that's what happened. So the arrow here is actually not right. It's about 200,000 years ago. At 200,000 years ago, there was a big change when modern humans evolved from less modern humans. And what this interesting website was showing was, how could you go from a very, very primitive humanoid form to a very advanced humanoid form when something should take many, many millions of years, not just the odd three or four? On the left is a human, and on the right is a fossil called Lucy. It's about 2 to 3 million years old. In order to sell the idea that apes are humans and that we can trace humanity back in this form, I'll show you what they do. Can I move here? Shoulder blade. You know that monkeys have really long arms that go right past their knee. So what these people do is they artificially lift these bones up too high so that the fingers come up above the knee and they'll pass it off as a human. That's human. That's where your shoulders should be. They artificially lift them up because they haven't got human fossils, really, at the number they say they have. And they say, well, this is a cross between a human and an ape, and it shows how it's evolving. But when you actually look at it from an anatomical point of view, there's no way it's human. But they have to pad out the lie. 1.8 million years and about 1.8 million years. That's the best rendition of the faces of creatures that lived on this planet. That's the best you're going to get at the moment. How did it go from that, 1.8 million, 1.8 million, to that? Now, this gentleman, if you put him in a suit and a trilby hat, popped him down to the local supermarket, he'd probably get away with it. The other two wouldn't. Yet within a few 100,000 years, impossible from an evolutionary point of view, this came about. What caused the revolution? That's what we call a pebble tool. That's what we call a hand axe. If you're interested, I brought some for you. These are genuine. This is made about 1.7 million years ago. It's from Africa. And this is made 1.6 million years ago. How did it go from that to that in 100,000 years? It's not technically possible. But it is possible if someone is mucking around with your genetic material and changing and altering you. That's how it's possible. Okay, here we go. My turn. The shadow beings, sometimes called the shadow people. Anybody seen what we would call shadow beings? Who's going to be brave and put their hands up? All right. Maybe you've seen them and you don't want to put your hands up. I fully understand that. They're not very pleasant creatures. On the Wiki Encyclopedia, I'm sorry it's not so good. When I did this, I had no intention of doing a talk about it. I just printed this for my own sake. On the right-hand side is a guy, and on the left is somebody's rendition of what they thought they saw. Here's a better one. On the left is called the Hat Man. On the right is the Hooded Figure. These are shadow people. Now I'm going to show you the drawing that I did about 4 years ago when I was a child. Take a very close look at that. When I was 5, 6 years old, I just called him the Smoke Man. It wasn't a shadow being, it was a Smoke Man. He was a Smoke Man because he appeared to have the smoke come off him. That's me. On the left-hand side is a little boy. And I was taught when I saw it, I would signal. So arms out. It's not very good. It can't put its arms out. It puts them up an angle. That means I'm alone. You can come in. Comes through the window, stands in front of me, raises its arm up, I raise my arm up. What this doesn't show is that an energetic charge runs across from one of its hand to the other. It then throws that energetic charge to me. And what that means is a DNA lock. It means that nobody else can interact with me because he has that DNA code. So if anybody else tries to hack in or to interrupt, that lock is a DNA code. So it can't actually get in. No one else can get in without that. It's a very, very clever device. The creature has like lumps on its head and just eyes. I have no memory of a nose or a mouth at all. Not substantial, but energetic. And black, very dark. The reason it's black and dark, I was chatting to a good friend of mine, we were talking about this, is that when you come from the fourth dimension and you don't quite come into the third, it's a bit like a black hole. Light. So light doesn't detect this. So that's why it shows really black, because it's not quite come through to the third dimension. Okay, so that's a shadow being. Many, many people have very difficult times with these beings. They can torment and really hurt people. Here we go, the Jinn and the Valon. Here's something taken from the East, and it's a religious man on his prayer mat, and that is their representation of a Jinn. And here is the jinn is trying to tempt the religious man. Okay. I want to talk about a year ago. I went down to the beach. I have a beach hut. And I remember with my wife, we were both standing there, and she said, "Oh, those birds. Look at those birds." This is about 7:30 at night. And looking on the railings, looking down at the sea, where the sea was coming on the rocks, and from the corner of my eye, I would see what looked like a bat. And then nothing here. And then this side. So it's not a bat, because you know the human eye has cones in the center of the eye and rods at the edge. The rods detect black and white, the cones detect color. So what you will see in the peripheral vision is something. But when you look at it, because it's natural, isn't it? You look at it, it's gone. Because you've got to try and follow it from the side. So those were Jim. I come from if you remember my first talk with you, I come from what we would call a non-satanic, Illuminati, magical family. And Jim will be around me all the time. During Skype sessions, people will say, "What the, is that going across your room?" It's all right, it's all right. It's Jim. Don't worry about it. Drawing, somebody who now works for one of the Rothschilds in Eastern Europe, very kindly did me a jinn that she sees regularly, that's around her, and it needs to be black. Couldn't get colour in, but you can imagine that sort of a very dark grey. That big, that's when it's in its energetic stage. And we're not doing the Illuminati talk, but if you think about Peter Pan and Tinkerbell, if you've read any of that, Tinkerbell is a jinn. All right, 1971, very quickly, this is on YouTube, so I'm not going to go over it too much. 1971, I was 11 and 3 quarters years of age, and I had my 2-day experience with a UFO. There it is, it's a teardrop, silver, no windows, no sound, and I can remember the sunlight reflecting off the beautiful silver of this surface. And it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Absolutely beautiful. And I wasn't on my own. There were 5 kids with me. And this is the deal. Again, I'm not going to belabor the point because it's on YouTube and I'm sure you've all seen it. And he says to me, "Would you like to be like us? To have knowledge and understanding? To know the past? I beg your pardon. To see the future and know the past? To have power and..." And I'm so fascinated about knowing the past and the future that I shout out, "I should use my mind," but I didn't because I was so excited. So instead of, you know, using my mind, I use my voice, say, "Yes." And he immediately says, "Then come with me." And his hand drops off my shoulder, takes my hand and leads me away. That's what researchers call a soul agreement. And I'm privileged to have been allowed to remember that soul agreement. It's very important because you can use your soul agreement to escape them if you wish. That's why so many abductees do not remember their soul agreement. Because if they remembered their soul agreement and they'd been tortured and hurt, of course they would want out. So to me it was the bargain. I was 12, that was my bargain, fine. And that is what researchers refer to as a mantid. To me, it was mum. Mum. When I was perhaps 2.5, 3 years old, I referred to it as mother. And I was very, very confused, because how did I have two mothers? I had this one which said, I'm your mother, and I had my human mother. And so my biological mother said to me, the very, very first word I said was daddy. And for 6 months I called my biological mother daddy. And of course she wasn't my mother, because that was my mother. And I realized as you get older you can't do that, because it causes aggravation and upset. So I learned to play the human game. This is a mothership, for want of a better word. I use that word because that's what humans would call it. This is a mantid craft which is looking into human timelines. When you are born and when you die, you have a timeline. You exist. Let's just talk about this one reality. You have one timeline. If you want to be contacted or abducted, then it isn't just chance. This is project management on the nth degree. So they will come for you at 2 seconds past 2 o'clock, and they will spend 30 seconds with you or 50 seconds, and it has to be all project managed out. The guys on the front here, they're actually flying the craft. There are no poles holding the seats up. They are meant to be floating in the air. That's exactly what they're doing. These are viewing screens, and they are square. It's about one of the few square or oblong things you'll find on an alien craft. Most things are round or curved, but their viewing screens tend to be oblong or square. So they're flying it. These ones here are coordinating the information which is coming from the lower deck. We'll have a look at the lower deck in a moment. What I've tried to do is to draw the craft to show you how the power, the whole ship acts as a lifting body. It doesn't work like an aeroplane. The whole craft, some people refer to it as alive. That's not quite accurate, but it has to be the shape to conduct the energy around the hull of the craft. This is the commander of the craft, and I've done this incorrectly. He should have his right hand on this creature's other shoulder. You see, I've put it on this shoulder here. That's not correct. It should be on that shoulder. Why does that matter? Because mantids are chipped. They have a chip on their left shoulder so they can interact with humans. If you have a chance to talk to people who seriously are in depth with their investigations, they will know that humans will often place a hand on a Nordic or a mantid shoulder, because that allows communication. Right, let's carry on. I get accused of giving out too much information. I get accused of taking everyone along too fast, but I'm not going to dumb you down. Well, that's not what it's about. This is the lower level. What you've got here is these guys who are sitting, operating everything below this line. The standing guys here are operating everything above here. These two are semi sort of coordinators. Is the commander come down. So what these guys are doing is sending the information up to the top. So the twofold operation would be to identify where you're going to go to abduct people or contact people, and also to eavesdrop on every human communication available. And also enemy aliens. Because if you're interested in a certain human, you bet you someone else is as well, whether it's the NSA or the CIA, and you want to get there first. So when I say it's a game, I don't mean to belittle it, but it is very much like a game of chess. Okay, yes, I go on the operating table. I've given permission for that. It has to be done. I'm not dead. I've been told that as long as stuff goes on, they're going to keep my body healthy. This is an interesting tool. It's a handheld tool, and I haven't been told, but I guess that's DNA. It's some energetic DNA take. This is an interesting device here. It looks like a camera. It's not a camera. It's something that comes down on a cord or a rope or something from a standing pole. Mantids often use equipment that's either handheld or is fixed in the ceiling. And I've got a very interesting drawing from somebody else to show you. That's me on the left, having DNA extracted. And this is a doctor mantid holding up a jar with a baby in, I presume saying, we've made this from your DNA. It's fine. That's the deal. This is from the collection of David Chase. This is somebody else who's come in, and then David Chase has done some drawings. And it really accounts well with my own experiences, because here the tool is fixed in the ceiling and is coming down. Mantids are three, it's called mantid, it's three. This is a doctor mantid, and if you ever get taken ill, that's what you want. You don't want a grey poking you about, you want a mantid. So the doctor mantids are the lowest rung. The next rung of command are the computer operators or the pilots of the craft. Then you go into the officer class, these are the ones that wear the purple robes, and they take the term master. Now the next rung up is called the universal master. I know, we don't live in a universe, we live in a multiverse, but each multiverse has its own verse, so each verse has its own master. Okay, that's how they work it. 1967, we're going to move forward. I forgot to bring my meteorite, I'm really sorry, I should have done. Young boy, sitting room, don't know where my biological mother is, it's probably 7 o'clock in the evening, and I see something fall about 50, 60 feet away. And it didn't fall diagonally, it fell straight down, as if you were dropping a stone. I thought, oh, what's that? It's a Saturday, so Sunday I went out and picked it up, and it was a meteorite. I took it to the museum, and it's been classified as a stony iron. Okay, well, when that meteorite fell, I had a visit, and this is a being that visited me. That is a costume it's wearing. Please don't think that that is natural. That is a costume that it has on. It, for the few times I've got a name, its name is Zuga. Zuga. However, it defected and joined the reptile faction, and when it joined the reptile faction, they said, you can't have a name Zuga, we're going to give you a reptile-sounding name. So her name was Zuga Lachlachla, which is roughly how a reptile, if we transferred it into English, would say. So she is a self-confessed servant of the reptiles. And this creature came into the front room and sat me, or stood me up, onto the coffee table. I had a coffee table, mother had a coffee table about that high, and said, look at the ceiling. I looked at the ceiling, and it just went black, and all the stars appeared. Now, she was going into my mind. This is what's known as mind projection. And she was saying, well, this is where we come from, and started pointing out the stars to me. And then we did something else which was very interesting. We just give her a little shake, because she's a very sexy creature. And I thought I'd been taken to a museum. Now, you wouldn't get the sign, would you, in real life, saying museum closed. Just wouldn't happen. But it's setting the picture for a young boy to know, oh, you're in a museum. And we have here a T-Rex, and then she lifts me up. Now, I reckon I'm on the coffee table still. She just picks me up by the waist and just lifts me up. So I have a physical movement to go with the mental projection. And time and time again, I reach out, and I do this several times, and I touch the tooth of the reptile. And they will say this quite often, look at you, the bridge between two worlds. So I'm often referred to as the bridge between two worlds, because the reptilian world and another world. And then I go around, and I know all my dinosaurs, and then a grey comes to collect me. So the point of showing you this is that this is not an experience where I've been taken away, but where I've just been in the front room and the creature has come in and just gone straight into my mind. Okay? I couldn't resist putting this in. That's my white cat, Snøstrana. He's a Norwegian forest cat. In 1971, when I had that experience, I was shown fossils in a cliff. Prior to that, the day before that, I was collecting coins, stamps, and matchbox tops. After my experience in 1971, I just gave all that up and collected fossils, because I'd had an experience where I'd been shown fossil dinosaurs. So from 1971 to this day, I collect fossils. That's why I was in the Natural History Museum. So that is a dinosaur jaw, and my white cat likes to sit with the dinosaur jaw. So I couldn't resist that. You may remember this. This is a genuine badge worn by Black Ops military. It was given to me because it's a white snake with red eyes. And for those of you who haven't seen the YouTube videos, we'll come back to it. So it's the 73rd Experimental Air Control Squadron. That means we fly UFOs, but we can't put that on the badges in case you get hold of it like I did. Experimental Air Squadron. But he's white, and he has red eyes, and he has a sword. All right, this is fairly well known, but it's very important. It's my life, and it's important to me. On the left-hand side, that's before I had initiation into a Draconis reptilian culture. And on the right-hand side, probably 6 months later, no longer this happy, smiling, carefree boy, but somebody who sees a lot, knows a lot, and has been completely changed. Not hurt, but just changed. Very lucky to have these pictures. Famous one for me now, it's becoming famous, gone around the world. 1965, I was asked, would I be a page boy friends that my mother worked with, choose my words carefully there, and I initially said no, and they just couldn't understand how a five-year-old boy could dictate to his mother what he was doing and what he wasn't doing. So anyway, I did agree to it simply because I understood that being a page boy was a very important point. You had a ritual, and those of you who know anything about reptiles know that ritual and ceremony are extremely important. But when you are taking part in a reptilian ceremony, you do not smile, because they don't smile. They can't smile. They have no need for smile. They don't have emotions. So that's why I am straight-faced. And it was really embarrassing. Those are the two bridesmaids behind. And it was like, God, can't you get him to smile? And my mother, biological mother, said, well, if he doesn't want to smile, he doesn't want to smile. I can't make him. That is why I look like that, because that's the way you have to be when you're in a ceremony. Obviously, as I got older, then... 2 minutes. There's a good point here. Prize for being a good page boy, the family sent us to Butlins for the week. And our mother came up and said, take a picture of you in Butlins and asked me to smile. Now, a researcher said, oh, you poor traumatized boy. No, that's not traumatized. That's how reptiles, that's a reptilian. Anybody here who's reptilian and don't want to admit it, or you have reptilian DNA, or you have a soul, you'll know what that is. That's the way you show interest. Right, okay, I think it's probably time for a tea break. There will be questions afterwards if anybody wants to ask any. So thank you very much indeed. Have a nice cup of tea. Please don't be too long, because I need to crack on. Thank you. Thank you. Interesting break, nice to talk to some of you. One particular person came up to me and had experienced some of those creatures. If she pops up afterwards, just write an email address down, maybe I can be of assistance. But what that's brought me out to say is that for everybody who stands here in front of you and says, I've had an okay relationship with aliens, there will be 500-600 who have not had an okay relationship with aliens. My story is very different. A book that's worth trying to get hold of is by Dr. Carla Turner, Into the Fringe. I think she's just about got it right. So whilst I am telling you that my situation is okay, that is not representative of the general situation. It's one thing to stand here and tell you how good it is. It's a totally different kettle of fish to say how bad it is. So people will find it very hard to stand in front of an audience and tell you how they've been abused. So it becomes skewed. You get stories of people who have okay times, and it begins to skew your perception. The perception is that most beings from the fourth dimension are negative to humanity. Okay. We need to speed up. I introduced you to the being I call Mum. Let me introduce you to the being I call Dad. Why do I call them that? Because that's what they wanted me to call them. You remember the badge or emblem I showed you of the white snake and the red eyes, which were given to me by a member of the American Special Forces. I've brought it tonight if anybody wants to have a look at that original badge. And this is a Draconis reptilian. Now, I am only aware of three types of reptilian. There are several, but I am aware of three sorts. This is the royal lion, Draconis. Those spines on its back are actually residual wings. He can't fly with them. Uses it to signal during ritual and ceremony. Can actually rustle them. It sounds like an old chamois leather, old dry leaves rustling. So it's a physical signal. So that's the creature I refer to as Dad. This took about 6 months to draw. A very helpful guy in America, an artist, reconstruction artist, would send me a drawing, an email. I would say, no, you've got the hands wrong, send it back. And this went back and forth for months, and this is the one we've got. And I'm very proud of it because that's as damned close to it as I can remember. Originally, when I was very little and I drew it, I drew the wings much bigger because as a small boy, that's the thing that, you know, takes all your eyes. But realistically, that's more like the wings. Mission patches, I always show these because people again say, where's the proof? These are the mission patches that the American Special Forces have. And this is peace through light and is a laser beam firing at a rocket. Well, the general public would be absolutely astounded to know that there are energy weapons. We'll call it a laser beam anyway. But that's not why I'm showing you. I'm showing it because there's a snake. Of all the animals or the images they could show you, they've used a snake. And on the left-hand side, we have a grey and a B-2 stealth bomber. The symbol in the centre is a technical symbol, meaning the closest you can get to being radar invisible. And it's the 509 squadron. And the 509 squadron was the squadron that airlifted all the bits and pieces from Roswell out. So they have an official badge with an alien grey for the same squadron in 1947 that airlifted all the refuse and the dead bodies out. And yet, of course, people say there's no proof. In Latin, it says, tastes like chicken. And I don't know whether it means that the aliens taste like chicken or the humans taste like chicken. And that's why, ladies and gentlemen, they even put a knife and a fork either side of it. Okay, this one is a dragon coming out of the clouds, firing lightning bolts. And Latin translated says, get out unless you're initiated. Do you remember I talked to you about how I was initiated into the reptilians and I showed you the two pictures? That's the word initiated. It's very interesting. Here's another one. What we have here is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars, Area 51. So they can't say Area 51, but they'll show the 5 stars and another one. So that's always a sign within the forces of Area 51. You have the Earth. It's not so clear here. There's a snake here and a dragon. And in Latin, incredibly, incredibly ominous, says, all your underground bases belong to us. That's what it says. All your underground bases belong to us. I don't see a human on there at all, actually. Here's one. Never before, never again. That's the translation. And we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars on the left-hand side. More ominously, we've got 3 snakes guarding the earth. I'm going to use the word guarding the earth. So it's snake after snake after snake on black ops projects. We'll come back to this one. Knights Templar, this is the NRO, National Reconnaissance Office. That's the secret department in America that uses all the spy satellites. And they have a Knights Templar, defenders of the domain. It's very interesting because greys, when debriefed in Area 51, refer to the land as the domain. But unfortunately, that's not an alien, necessarily. We'll come back to that. The grid is very interesting. Has anybody researched the alien hat man? The alien hat man. Okay. This is a guy who worked for the NSA, National Security Agency, and his job was to pass exotic material to contractors in the private sector to do with what they wanted. He also worked for Boeing and a huge number of organisations. He's very, very anti-alien. And he has come up, this is not a joke, this man is not a fool, he is your business. He's come up with a velostatic hat, which he's made himself. He doesn't ask any money for it. For people who are being abducted and want an end to abductions, he makes this hat, which they then wear. There are children in Britain who have special dispensation from their schools who wear his hats. And they have to be worn 24/7. And we'll talk about how they work. But this man phoned me at home from America and said, I hear you're a driving instructor. I said, yep. He said, do you know about the woman driving instructor in Britain who's giving driving lessons to alien hybrids? I genuinely didn't know about that. No, I don't know about that. And he said, well, what's happening is 2 o'clock in the morning, they're waking this woman up, she goes out, she gives these hybrids a driving lesson and comes back, because, as I'm sure you'll know, they are trying to integrate hybrids into the human society. Well, I didn't know about that. And that was all news to me. We had several conversations, I think it's about 5 or 6 hours difference between us. And then I made the mistake of saying to him, you're still in the military, aren't you? And at which point he never phoned me back again. So I got to assume the guy is still active in the National Security Agency, but that's fine. And here he is, his name is Michael Meakin, and you can find him on the internet, and if you genuinely have abductions by greys, then he might help you. Only greys. We'll talk about why that is. There's the man making the alien hat. There's a guy who wears the hat. And there's a girl who goes to school, and she's over 18 now, that's where I can use a picture. And she has a normal cloth cap over her special hat. I want to talk about it because it was very interesting. He phoned me up and said, oh, you're a driving instructor and you know about this woman. About 3 months after that, I had a friend of mine saying, oh, there's somebody looking for some driving lessons. Would you be interested? Yeah, of course. It's a business. Of course I'm interested. Got this person's address, lived in a village about 7 miles out of Whitby. Arrived, the woman's actually outside, fine, and she gets. And as soon as this woman gets in, I'm looking at her and thinking, well, you're not human. Absolutely not human. Because you think of your archetypal hybrid head. And I'm very pedantic. I'm talking about human-alien hybrid. Because I've seen non-human hybrids. Don't just think that humans are hybridized. So we're talking about a human with what we'd call grey DNA, genetic material mixed in. So hair falling out, give you a good example, very white hair, she's only about 40, but very sparse, falling out. Eyes, very almond shaped, very high cheekbones in the back of the head, a bit like you get the pharaohs. She gets in, chatting away. Okay, let's see what you can do, drive. And we've been driving about 15 minutes, and she just turned to me and says, do you know Dr. Stephen Greer? To which I say, well, no, I don't, but I know of him. So she wants this conversation about oil and free energy, this, that, and the other, and I'm trying to teach her to get out of second gear, because she's making my clutch go. So she wasn't a particularly brilliant driver, but she wasn't too bad. But the point I'm making is this bit as a classic example of where the difficulty to interact these people. I'm going to call them people because they are people. She says to me, can you drop me at the co-op? I'll do some shopping. Fine. Okay? Got to park up nicely. This is the point that a pupil would normally pay me. Back then, I only charged £15 an hour because I'm not greedy. I actually just want to make a living. £15 an hour is really good. Didn't pay me. Okay, right, fine. She gets out. You can do that in a black cab in London and, you know, go berserk. So I got out, chatted to her. £15. Now, you all know what £15 is, don't you? It's a £10 note and a £5 note. Or a £20 note and you want some change. And she holds me a £5 note out. Smiling. A really big smile. Now, I understand these people, so I just said, thank you very much indeed. Took the £5 note. Because they have no concept of money. And you think, well, how do you get around? Well, you get around because you have a debit card. It's one of the very few times you actually had to use money, although they will have had lessons. Anyway, I thought, give it 2 weeks, and I didn't hear from her again, so I drove to the house and couldn't see anybody. The curtains were pulled. Went back again about a fortnight later, nobody. Went back a third time. I thought, well, I'll knock on the neighbour's door. Knocked on the neighbour's door and said, I'm trying to get her in, you know, is she in? And the guy looks at me and says, housing association properties. And he says, well, no one's lived there. It's empty. There's no one there. And I said, but she's got two boys. Looked at me as if I'm mad. So I phoned up at Yorkshire Coast Homes, which is the housing provider. And they said to me, it's been vacant for 6 months. Don't know what you're talking about. Now, I don't understand why I only had one lesson. Why did I only have one driving lesson with her? She needed more. So there's got to be a link between Mr. Hatman phoning me from America, NSA, saying to me, oh, you're a driving instructor. Have you heard about the woman who does the driving lessons for the hybrids? No. And I know now what happened. I made a joke to him. I said, oh, I wouldn't have to do it at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'd do it during the daytime. And then a few weeks later, I get the real thing. But no concept of money. It's the grid we're looking at. And on the back of that one, you can see, not as clear, but there's a grid. I'm not a New Ageist. Some of the stuff from the New Ages, actually, I'm quite good about and I think makes sense, but a lot of it isn't, and sometimes my story isn't one that lots of people want to hear. That grid is not the natural grid of the earth. That's not the ley lines. That is an energetic overlay. When you die, i.e. your physical body ceases to exist, your soul doesn't go back to source. It wants to, gets caught in that grid. It is struck with a huge amount of electromagnetic energy, which makes you forget. And then your soul, for want of a better word, I use the word soul, is put back into another body. And only sometimes when the process fails do you have what we call memories of past lives. Time and time and time again, souls are recycled on this planet. That's why that guy there stands there with the sword, because that's their domain. You're not getting out. That's a prison. This is a prison planet. I'm sorry, it's not a nice thing to say, but that's my view, and that's what's going on. That's why on the Black Ops badge it's exactly the same. It has a grid around it. I was with somebody and I was taken, we were both taken, physically taken while driving a motor car. I couldn't tell you how they did that. They have no clue. The person concerned also was aware, and when the Channel 4 did the documentary of me, they thought, oh, right, well, he won't be able to prove this, will he? So they said, what's the name of the person? Here you go, name and address. She doesn't live in this country, she's in another country, but there's the details. They absolutely went white. They never followed it up. There was another person who would have corroborated my story, but did they want it? No, they didn't. And this was a take from the motor car, classic missing time. And the interesting thing was that we remember leaving a supermarket in a place called Scarborough, which you may know, and then literally, the next thing we remember was a big lorry coming towards us, flashing its headlights. And I remember turning to my friend and saying, oh, there must be an accident up ahead. He's flashing to warn me. Or he thinks I'm on full beam. So I'll just flash him back to show him that I'm not on full beam and that it's okay. There was no accident. Long story, won't go into it, but that was actually a taken from a motor car. And the technology that must be available to them is just staggering, even for me, how that was done. On New Horizons website, you quite legitimately lifted this picture. Interestingly enough, this picture was sent to me because I had posted this picture on the right in one of my talks, and a researcher from America suddenly realized that, hey, we've got people in America drawing things similar, so he showed me that. And it's nice when people thousands of miles away can corroborate your story or say, do you know what, I've seen something like that. And so that's very interesting. So I thought that would be good. That is meant to be a hole in the top, just as that has a hole in the top as well. But it was never drawn, I never drew that to show you, it was just for my own personal records. And people say to me, go over it with a black liner so it shows out better. No, because that would corrupt the drawing. That's what I remember. Okay, very quickly now. If someone could give me a 15-minute shout when we're running out of time, because otherwise I'll... when you're somebody like me, you tend to have a different relationship with authority. When I applied to be a driving instructor, I was told, we've got no records of you. We don't know where you went to school. We don't know where you lived. We've got nothing of you at all. Can you please show us, prove to us that you've actually been in Britain for a long time? And I did this to my grandfather, and I was able to show them. That's why I'm a qualified driving instructor. But it's very interesting that when the DSA, the Driving Standards Agency Authority, went to check, they couldn't. There's no records of me having any education in this country at all. And when this physical body dies, I will be completely scrubbed from the record. That's what they do to people like me. Right, I'm going to give you five examples. Because if I give you one example, you'll say, yeah, but that could happen to anyone. Two examples, so I'm going to give you five. Right, Hackney, London. Oh, God, 1994, 95. At home, my wife, 6 o'clock, having a cup of tea again. Big bang outside, rushes outside. My car's parked outside the house. A BMW, the Americans call it T-boning. Crashed straight into it. I rushed out, the guy jumped in the car and drove off. That's not unusual in Hackney. I got the, what we call the index, what people would call the number plate. Phoned the police, 999, explained what happened. Right. Phone goes. Oh, hello, sir. Is that Mr. Parks? Yep. Oh, New Scotland Yard here, sir. And we've put roadblocks on every road out of London. And we've got him. We're bringing him back to the house. Will he be in? Take us about 20 minutes. Yeah, I'll be in. The policemen I always see are about 7 foot tall. I have no idea why. I'm not joking with you. 6 foot 8, 6 foot 9, 6 foot 10. Two huge policemen who don't fit in the bloody roof of the house, almost. Bring the guy in. Is this him? Yes, that's him. Right. He doesn't have a driving license. What's happened is he's stopped the car, gone in to get some fags. Because he can't drive, he hasn't put the handbrake on. The car's rolled down, smashed into car. But the father has lent him the car keys, full well knowing he doesn't drive. Are you going to be in tonight, sir? Yeah. Don't go to bed early. Stay up late. Why? Well, just stay up late, sir. Okay, fine. 20 past midnight, two policemen, one the same, one different, walks up with the dad. And he says, well, they took me to the cash point. They made me take out 200 quid... at 1 minute to midnight, 200 quid afterwards, that's 400 quid to pay for the damage. So he gives me £400 and the policeman arrests him and says, right, we're arresting you now. So that's car damage in London. I pay my taxes and that's the sort of service I would expect everyone to get. We'll get some more now. Knife man, Hackney, outside, 3 o'clock in the morning, man with a knife that big trying to get into the house. It's Hackney, it happens all the time. Phone the police, 999. Man out there with a knife, right. He wanders off, and police car pulls up, copper runs right out, bangs on the door, are you all right, are you all right? Yeah, he said, I'm really sorry. It's taken us 4 minutes to get to you. We like to get to you in 2 to 3 minutes. Where did he go? Well, he went, right, off he goes, and literally, I just watched the police car out of the left-hand window, wax on the brake, as a woman and a man, coppers, run out. Oh, they spotted him. And it seemed weird because as soon as that, there was a police helicopter, sirens from everywhere. Telephone goes, is that Mr. Parks? Scotland Yard, he's a, I beg your pardon, New Scotland Yard, he's a. We've got him. We'd like to describe him. And they described him, combat jacket, army, wearing army clothes, because he was a soldier. Is that him? Yeah, I said, that sounds like him. Right, unfortunately, he doesn't have a knife on him, so we can't arrest him. What we're going to do is put him in the van, drive him 5 miles up the road and put him out the back of the van. You'll never know you called us. Okay. Census job. 92, 91, I did a bit of extra money. I did the census. And in London, that's a pretty rough job to do. And there was one housing estate where they were very unhappy. So I thought, I'm not having that, because if I don't get the census done, you know, I was young then. Sold the census now, but I wanted to do it. And I thought, that's not fair, because, you know, I want to call on these people's houses. So I went to the police station, Ladywell Police Station in Lewisham, and I said that, you know, I'm trying to do the census, and these people are being very unhelpful. So the sergeant sort of said, what are you wasting my time for? You know, we've got better things to do than that. What's your name? Took my name, took my details, and it's always the same case. They go and check, I don't know, it's national insurance number, what have you. came straight out and said, hang on a minute, sir, five constables and him, the sergeant, get in the van, we'll do it now. So five constables and a sergeant and me and my girlfriend at the time who was doing it, in the van, drove round to the housing estate, and they all, coppers, all came round to the door. Do you know what? We've never had 100% ever before from that block. That's not normal, is it? But at the time it was great. Flowers, okay? I devote a lot of my free time to, I don't like the word, it's the real word though, to deprogramming people who have been traumatized by Illuminati dark magicians who have fractured personalities, and I don't charge. All they have to do is either get themselves to me, if they can't afford to fly to me from all over the world, and I'll Skype. It takes a much longer time to do it by Skype. These were a mother and a daughter who came to me from Canada because she had, the daughter had a gin put into her. And they had literally just been in my front room for about 20 minutes and the doorbell goes. Okay, open the door. There's a boy about 14 years of age and again a policeman about 6'10" behind him. And the boy is standing there with about three wilty flowers in his hands. So I look at the boy and I look at the policeman. And the policeman says, this boy's got something to tell you, sir. So I said, yes. And the boy said, I took these flowers from your garden. And the policeman said, I was on patrol. I saw the boy take the flowers. I spun the car round. I've grabbed him and I've brought him up to you. So I said, it's a very naughty thing to do. Do you want to keep the flowers? Yes, please. You can keep the flowers. And I tell you what, there's a couple of nice ones there. Why don't you pick them and take them as well? And the policeman wasn't going. So I said, would you like to come in? Yes, please. Came in, and the two people who come from Canada, both standing there, the sergeant comes in, looks at them, and says to me, well, I'll be on my way now. And the two people said to me, do you know what? And he just couldn't wait to see us, could he? Salesman, guy going from door to door, trying to sell scrap metal. I didn't like the look of him. Not because I don't like people who sell scrap metal, but he had a whiff of the CIA about him. And so I didn't phone 999, because it's not an emergency, is it? You wouldn't want to waste public money. So I phoned the non-emergency number 4 to 5 minutes later, sergeant and a constable at the door. Are you all right, sir? Yes, I'm fine. It's just this man. We'll have details of him. Attempted break-in about 7 or 8 years ago in Whitby. Smashed the window at the front, phoned the police. Shock horror, they were 5 minutes to get to me. And the very first thing the copper said to me was, I don't want you to think we've only just arrived. We've had three cars sent, and the only reason I've come to your door now is because we just tell you we can't find them. So he said, have a look through the bits of glass. If you can find any blood, give us a shout, because there might be DNA. He said, I can't look for it because I don't want to put my DNA on it. Off he went. I thought, oh, it's not going to happen, is it? Look through, sure enough, piece of blood. Oh, great. Let's see how good they are. Phone the police. Now, I'm not joking to you. I said, I'm Lynn Whitby. I've just had a front door broken, and the woman says, is that Mr. Parks? I said, yes. And I said, I've been told to look for blood. Found some. Someone will be there in 20 minutes. And they were. Doorbell goes, and this guy, different guy, just puts a test tube and tweezers, put it in there. 3 years later, doorbell goes. Just wanted to let you know we finally caught the person that broke in. They weren't attempting to break in to get to you. It was just what we call criminal damage. These are not, when I talk to people and I explain what's happened, people say, well, I don't get that level of service. What I was told was that the American government has two lists. A list of everybody who has alien experiences and contacts. The aliens are supposed to provide this list, and it's not up to date. The government therefore creates its own list. There is another list where the human government has abdicated responsibility for those individuals. Sure, if I park on a double yellow line, I get a ticket. I have to pay taxes, unfortunately. But in terms of anything greater than that, it is not their decision. It was my human mother who told me that, and I understand that I'm on that second list. Right, you may remember I did the radar visit. This completely confounded mainstream media because I'd gone public saying, look, my mother worked for MI5, my grandfather worked for MI6, and I see aliens. And yet I get invited into one of the most top secret locations in Britain. And the media immediately couldn't understand that. Because if this man's off his head, why is he being allowed into an American, it's not British, an American facility that is a space radar base? Why is he getting a personal tour? This doesn't make sense. And so suddenly the media didn't know what to do with me. Channel 4 did a 1 hour interview regarding my family working with the Secret Services, and we did a half an hour interview with the backdrop of the radar station. Channel 4 told me they got a phone call from the Ministry of Defence telling them to pull it, or they wouldn't be allowed to do any of it. So they pulled it. Once I did the radar base, suddenly all the BBC radio stations didn't want to interview me anymore. And I got a big increase in foreign TV and foreign radio stations wanting to interview me. Here's a picture that you don't see. They don't like to show you that. That's the radar base, and that's the razor wire around the base. It is a space radar, and it goes up to about, allegedly, about 12,000 miles. That's what they call the fence. And it's the radar section. Anything coming into that is detected. That's the official coverage. And that's Filingdales. I live 10 miles from Filingdales. Odd that. The story I tell is my daughter was also invited. I haven't got permission to talk about her, but we were both invited. And at the barrier where the Ministry of Defence police are, you have to show identification. You have to show who you are before you go onto their land. So she passed her passport across, and the guy, obviously they are not semi-automatic machine guns, they are fully automatic machine guns now, so they're very well equipped. And he looks at the passport, and he looks at her, and looks at the passport, looks at her, looks at the passport, looks at her, yeah, he's convinced that is who it is, passes it back. I go to show him my identity, he just holds his hands up and says, "That won't be necessary, sir. Go through." At the briefing, I'm very fortunate to have got these pictures. These are exactly the pictures that were shown at the briefing. On the left-hand side is a missile, and the guy running it says, "We track those are missiles. We track those are spy satellites." Ha 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 ha, is exactly what he did. "We don't see these. Ha 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 ha, we sometimes see these." Now, everyone else in the military who I've talked to who have had this visit, so they never got that. But what is interesting is that is what's called the sports model, which was found allegedly in Area 51. So the person who's produced this is having in his own way, he could have chosen any drawing of a UFO, but he's gone for what Bob Lazar, who allegedly, and I believe him, back-engineered craft on Area 51 called the sports model. So I got a special couple of slides for my presentation. I was invited on the 50 years that it had been operating. For 50 years there's been a radar base. And I'm not in the picture, that's not me, but this was the official celebrations. And the real crew that matter are well at the back, so you can't see their faces. But these are the military personnel who guard it. That's not an ordinary police car. Ministry of Defence police cars are exactly the same, but they have a different logo. That is the phased array, which is the only one in the world of its kind. There is no other radar station like that in the world. It's three faces. It looks around almost the whole of the globe. And when it had the 50 celebrations, the Red Arrows came and flew over to celebrate. And it used to be an analog display, the three golf balls, and then it changed when the Americans went for Star Wars and became the phased array, which is digital. So that's where I got a tour. I had the tour of that. We'll talk about that very quickly. But it's 50 years. I want to show how things have changed. These are Ministry of Defence police officers guarding a sensitive building some 25 years ago. That's what they look like. Here they are now. That's what they look like now. Like that. That's how your world has changed. Unbelievable. A very interesting weapon. Very interesting weapon. That was it a number of years ago. Yes, this is the control room, which we went into. In those days, look, there's even a fish tank. Right? But I tell you what is interesting. I'm going to move now. Sorry. It says here something along how many objects in space. And there's something like 4,000 being tracked. 4,000 being tracked. And this is 30 years ago. You can see the equipment. Let's have a look at it now. It's very hard to get pictures of this base. Look how it's changed. And people will say, well, where's all the big computers? It's a separate room. The computer room is a separate room. Now, you will find this hard to believe, but one of my neighbours actually works there. I don't want to give too much away, but he actually works on the computer room. And he's a neighbour. And we often chat about it. This is a staged picture for the press, but it's genuine actions. When a contact, a UFO, is contacted, the guy who's in charge is there. He's asking, I've got one contact. I can get it as well, because I've made contact, and I'm on the phone, the hotline, and they have also got it. I am coordinating these two, and I can confirm we have a contact. Okay, that's how they work here. What you don't see in any of these pictures is the secret part. I'm going to tell you where it is. Here is where the Americans are. This is a locked door. And when they have a UFO sighting, the Americans press a code which opens the door. These guys then take the orders from the Americans. So it is called RAF Filingdales, but it is run by the Americans. Okay, and during my visit, we should have been there for an hour. We were there for 3 hours. And at the end of the visit, the guy running it said, okay, well, we've got some things to give out. And he opened a tin, and there was the pencils and the rubbers and the little trinkets. Great if you're running a scout club, because you've got those things to fundraise or give away. I wasn't really interested in that, you know, pen fobs and that. But in the back of this case were all the trophies that they'd won for their different sports teams. And in the side were medals celebrating this very special occasion of 50 years. And I said, oh, they're nice, aren't they? And he said, yes, they are nice. He said, I can't give one to you. He said, because we present them. We've only got 500. It's a limited number of 500. And we give them to people, generals and dignitaries who come to visit us, and we've got to make them last the whole year. Can't give them to you. He said, anyway, we don't give them away. They have to make a contribution. So I said, oh, what sort of contribution? He said, well, they cost us £25 to make, but we take a tenner, and it sort of goes back to it. But, they're very special. And I said to him, I was standing with two people. One was an ex-soldier, and one was an ex-RAF. And I said to him, well, couldn't you present one to me? And these two guffawed, laughed. And the guy said, I don't see why not. So I haven't got any money, because I had to give everything at the guard. But my daughter, who's much more bright than I am, had hidden some money down a sock. So has he got any money? He's got a tenner. So he gave me £10, gave him the ten. And he said, the Americans insist I take your name. I said, you know my name. He said, yes, I know, but for officialdom. Gave him my name. He said, right, well, everyone has a number on this medal, and I have to write your name next to the medal number. You cannot sell this. You can only pass it down to your members of the family. I brought it tonight to show you, if you're interested. And the funny thing was that the other two guys both took out their £10 notes for one, and he just locked everything up, put it away in the case, and said, well, ladies and gentlemen, I think we need to go. Sergeant, if you take the front, I'll take the rear. And these two guys with their £10 notes there. Anyway, I brought it for you tonight. It's really lovely. It's got the radar base on the back, and it says 50 years of vigilance, and there's the phased array. And on that side, it says number 86 out of 500. And so I was presented it. So this is what the media and others can't understand. How is it that someone who claims that his parents run the security service sees aliens, can have a tour of a base and be treated like that? And this is what's made those people who want to make a fool out of me suddenly back off. And why, unfortunately, for many ways, the foreign press is all over me now. It's such a shame. This is not my picture. It's sent to me. Orbs. I often get asked, what are the orbs? I don't mean the orbs that make the crop circles. I'm talking about these orbs. And twice now during Skype sessions, a person has sort of got, oh my God, what's that behind you? And of course, I invariably look the wrong way. And orbs are the consciousness of another entity entering your third dimension, I beg your pardon, our third dimension, simply because we're more dense. And when you project pure consciousness into a denser form, it will make it into a circle. So somebody is popping in and observing. It's not like a jinn or anything like that. That's somebody of a higher being zooming in, using his or her consciousness to come and visit you. So if you have orbs, somebody is taking an interest in you. Okay? And that's a genuine picture. It's not a lens flare. That is an orb. And you can see them because they are manifest in a 3D world. Sometimes people won't see things, but the camera will. And that's because it's phasing in and out between third and fourth dimension. Genuine, you've all seen it, but I don't want to tell you that is a genuine craft. I'm not saying that's an alien craft. If we expect a false flag alien invasion, these are the craft that will be used. These are first generation back engineered craft. They're grey, small grey, not tall grey. And these, if they're going to try and do a false flag, these are the craft they'll use. Okay, so just be aware of that. This is sent to me, it's on the internet now, I published it, and everyone's got it now on the internet. This is a picture sent to me of an alien coming down an ordinary stairway from an aircraft, having a high-ranking meeting with somebody in the States. And it's taken on a very, very long photo lens, specially adapted for nighttime. It's been enhanced. And it's available now, you just get it on the internet, because why do we keep things secret? On the left-hand side, a artist's rendition of a lion being. I don't want you to think of a lion in a zoo. That's the name they're given, because their ears are about half an inch higher up than ours. Very human. Longer face. Looked like a bit like a red Indian sometimes. And this is a drawing from a book. And on the right-hand side is my drawing of what I've seen. And the being makes a sign, which is a Illuminati sign, but it's the sign of the Great Pyramid. And these beings had a very important hand in the building of the Great Pyramid. We haven't got time to talk about the races, but perhaps next time I might. Our talk is drawing to a close. I can't say goodbye without talking about the birthday card and the interview. You may have seen the interview. I was on the morning breakfast TV show last year with Philip Schofield and Holly Willoughby. For small groups who are starting up, I don't charge. I only charge my fuel. For a bigger group like yours, I do charge something. But for the private sector, I make them pay. If they want me up, then they pay for it because they can afford to. It's the people's money. Let's get it back. But for small groups, any group under sort of 30, I don't charge. I go all over the country and I don't charge them. I only say pay my petrol, because it shouldn't be about making money, really. Anyway, these people really wanted me, and they paid me £500 for 20 minutes. That's how much they wanted me. And I thought it was a good chance, because this is one of the largest viewed television programs in England, and it would be a great chance to get my story out without somebody, you know, trying to make it difficult. I arrived at the studio and I was asked to do some drawings of the aliens. They wanted to put them up. I had two drawings, of course, mum and dad. The woman who was with me said they hadn't a clue what they were. I told her, took them away, came back and said, "We are not allowed to show the reptilian drawing, but we can show the other one." That should be a very interesting point for you. The interview itself was excellent in the sense that Philip Schofield is an incredibly intelligent man. He understood about souls, he understood about Eastern religions, a very, very intelligent man. Holly Willoughby was perfectly fine. The interview was very interesting because I attacked a senior conservative politician who had attacked me earlier. And when I got back home, I had a phone call from the Labour Party saying, "Next time you're going to attack a senior Tory politician, for God's sake, tell us so we can have the press boys ready." And that's me being interviewed, Schofield, Holly Willoughby, and the drawing of mum. But they wouldn't put up a reptile, because that's just too near the truth in terms of power and influence. And now I'm told that I'm not going to be interviewed anymore by radio stations because I keep getting the better of them. Although Philip Schofield asked me to go back. About 3 weeks after that, he insisted that I go back for another interview, and I just couldn't do it because I was working in a school, and my constituents come first. And so I said, no, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I have a prior engagement. But Philip Schofield was very interested. But I don't really get many interviews now in Britain because I don't come across the way they want. They want a raving madman. It doesn't work like that. So they can't handle it, so they don't want it. You're all familiar, hopefully, with the birthday card. I have brought it along for anyone who hasn't seen it. This is the birthday card that has my picture on it, although I have no memory of being on it. And whoever was sitting next to me has been airbrushed out and a big teddy bear put in there. Who in their right mind would buy a birthday card that said Sir Geoffrey was about to discover that bears don't just in the woods? And the story is that I was in a shop called Card Factory, and my wife was buying discounted wrapping paper in January, as you do, and I turned, and on the carousel was these pictures. You know the story because you've checked it out on the internet, and I'm sure you're familiar with it. But what I have done tonight, and not only have I brought the card, but I've brought my ID badge when I was a Labour councillor in London at the same time, because I have the same shirt on. Because people say to me, how do you know that's you? And I say, well, of course it's me. But prove it. Well, I have a picture here with the same shirt on. And when I was meeting a Tory government minister, always meet these people, I have the same shirt on. I don't have the same tie, unfortunately. So I brought that along to show you. What's that about? The camera is not through the window. That's a hidden camera in the footwell looking up. And this has been placed here by the security services to say, either we know what you're up to, I wish they'd tell me, because I don't, or you did a good job. I haven't a clue. Okay? So there were only 5 or 6 of these cards made, literally. And the only store that they were distributed in was the store where I live. So there was only 5 or 6 of them, and they only went to the store. And the managing director of the card factory, who managed the store where they were in, said to me, well, we'll pull them now anyway. And I said to him, why is that? Because I made a complaint. And he said, no, he said that they were a test run. And I said, well, you know, how many have you done? Thinking they'd done thousands. And he said, well, we did, I think it's 5 or 6. I said, you only made 5 or 6. How do you know whether it's going to sell well if you've only done 5 or 6? His answer was, I'm only the managing director. That's honestly his reply. And I said, you're telling me you only made 5 or 6, and which store did you put them in? Your store. So, I think that says a lot. I went to the press because I thought, I want pressure on the company. The company who hold the copyright are in America. What a surprise. I contacted them, and they said to me that the name for this person in the card is not the same name as me. So I said to them, you're telling me that's not me then? And the response was very telling. Oh no, Mr. Parks, we're not saying that's not you, but the name we've got for this person is not yours. To which I said, what are you going to do about it? And the reply was nothing, because English law doesn't touch us. So because of that, I went to the newspapers. I wanted the media to phone the company, which they did. And the editor of the Whitby Gazette then, John Stokoe was his name, phoned me at home and said, we've researched you, Simon, and I'm convinced your story is genuine. I've been to the other side, and they are just saying no comment. Do you want me to make this national? Because he said, I can. We can make a big story out of this. And I said, no, because this is security service stuff. And he said, you might be right. And I just thought I'd end with a tall grey, because we don't really hear about tall greys very much. There's a tall grey. Very nice creature, very happy. Some tall greys are horrible. This particular one was very nice. I ended up being upset because it just wanted to observe me. I felt like an animal in the zoo. It didn't want to come and show me anything or discuss anything with me. It's what the Americans call coupon day. He had got the coupon to come and see me and have a chat with me. So that's it. That's the end of it. So thank you very much indeed. If you've got any questions, I'm more than happy to take them. I'm happy if it's a personal nature to exchange emails. But if there's any general questions now, I'd be really delighted to take them. Hi.
A lot of what's been coming up recently, I've been looking at, is the star Sirius and Orion's belt. What has that got to do with all this, the pyramids and everything?
If you were fortunate enough to actually go, not so much to the pyramid, but to some of the temples that contain the real burials of the pharaohs, you will find around that time, allegedly, lots of figures which Egyptologists claim to be men with masks on. From Sirius A, you will find beings that are portrayed with cat faces. Very, very prevalent with the building of the pyramids. What we would call the lion people, for want of a better word, originated from Orion, one of the Orion planets. Orion's very important, as is Sirius, because there's a very big star portal, stargate there. The race divided, and one group went to one of the Sirius planets, and we would refer to those as the cat people. But they have a name, and their proper name is Kilroti. Kilroti. The Kilroti, the ones that worked with the priesthood to organize and build the pyramids. I personally don't accept the pyramids are only 5,000 years old. Okay? As a geologist, I would say you're looking at between 15 and 20,000 years. So I hope that's of some help to you. I haven't gone into huge detail about it because we haven't got the time. If you've seen the Channel 4 documentary, then you know all about the cat people. And I'm quite happy at a later date to talk about it, but we're on questions. Thank you. Anybody else? Hi.
Do you have any comments to make on animal mutilations?
There were two very prevalent guys who investigated them, both in Wales and in other parts of the country. And they have some very interesting pictures of cattle actually being lifted up. The only device that would you could take an eye out or take a tongue out would be with a laser beam. Some of the greys have what you'd call Harry Potter style a wand, which is a self-defense weapon. In fact, from the Roswell crash, they collected, that's where your laser beams come from. And it is the laser that's used to cut them out. They are using or taking parts, some parts, glands, can be interchangeable with humans. However, the black ops, the military, are also taking cattle to throw interest off and to create a smokescreen. It's a contentious issue, and a number of researchers who have gone down that road have found that they attract an awful lot of attention. Okay. Okay. Anybody else? Gentleman at the back. Hey. If I was, and I'm not, if I was a member of the Illuminati, I would be very worried at the way things were going, because it would be looking more and more unlikely that my New World Order was going to come to fruition. And so I would need something bigger than 9/11 to allow me to have martial law. And the best way to do that would be to have a enemy force from outside, which would mean that every country in the world would feel they would have to come under the banner of the Americans for protection. That would allow me then to do a number of things with you guys. I could get you to be chipped so that I would know exactly where you were. I could control you. It would allow me to say, oops, there's an epidemic of alien virus. I need to inject you all. But the reason that it's a real conundrum is because once those dice are thrown, there's no going back on it. There was a big debate about the Olympics. Would there or wouldn't there be a false flag invasion? And the trouble is, you know, when researchers quite genuinely put this point forward, it's like crying wolf. And people begin to say, look, this is ridiculous. You know, you say there's an invasion, there isn't. This is going to happen, there isn't. All I would say to you is that if you make enough noise and bring it to the attention, they can't do it because too many people have woken up to it. And the hope is they keep on doing this and then the voices of dissent get less and less and less until something happens and some people get wind of it, but not enough. It doesn't do the rounds on the internet. It would serve the Illuminati very well. Any more questions? Just gentlemen first, then you. Right, okay. I ideally hope that humanity can evolve. I ideally hope that humans can do what you need to do, I beg your pardon, do what we need to do, simply because there is no 7th Cavalry coming to your rescue. You are the 7th Cavalry. You have to make it happen. There is no one going to come and help you. And it's very, very important that you resist anything that is going to take away your sovereignty. My own view is that humanity is going through a very crucial energetic phase at the moment. We talked about very briefly Jimmy Savile. 10 years ago, that would never have come out. Think of how things are coming out now. And what it is that officials in medium to medium high positions can no longer live with themselves, with the guilt, and they are whistleblowing and they're coming forward. Now, we haven't got the truth of Jimmy Savile, and that's my Illuminati talk. But at least it's coming out. A year ago, less than 6 months ago, the police dug up a dead girl body in Scotland that had been there for nearly 40 years. So for 40 years, somebody knew that this girl had been murdered and buried there, and now it came to light. And this is happening right across. Do you know, well, you may do, the crime figures for this country are the lowest they've ever been since records began. And in nearly every other country in the world, the crime figures are the lowest. Humanity is changing. The problem is that your bog standard, ordinary, decent, lovely human wants to see a volcano erupt. They want stars and bright colours. Because they are physical people in a physical world. If I can't see it and I can't touch it, it's not real. That's not the change that's coming. The change has got to come from within. The next change isn't the smaller transistor or the faster computer. The next change must be your ability to be telepathic. Your ability to lift something. Can you imagine how awful it is for me at home? When I vacuum the house, I have to pull a plug out of a vacuum cleaner. I have to go to a bloody wall, put it in, switch on. In a different world, that doesn't happen. Tesla invented the ability to send power through the air. It's not new technology, it's hidden. You know, people say, oh, electricity was discovered in whatever year. No, it wasn't. The Egyptians had electricity. That's how they electroplated things. How did they gold plate things? They used electricity. And in the Baghdad Museum, until it was stolen, was the original battery. And I had the great pleasure of having seen that in 1973. And it had lemon juice put in it, and it produced 1.5 volts. Anyway, that's another story. Anything else? Gentlemen. Yep. Do you remember I showed you the pictures of Stone Age people? It's my contention that humanity has been on this planet a very long time, but at some point the DNA was completely tampered with. To dumb you all down, to reduce your DNA strands down to 2, to take away your ability to be telepathic, so that you can't challenge the prison guards. If I was a being that could, I use the word feed, if I could feed on energy, how wonderful to have billions of people all being angry, having sex, enjoying football, and producing all that energy that I can then identify, hook onto, and survive on. I don't want you all going. If you go back to source, you'll think, I'm not going back to that place. That's a horrible place. It's horrible. Who would want to be here? So what we'll do is we'll put this energetic grid around the earth. Any soul that comes out, we'll see, let's go to Hollywood now. Look for the white light. Oh, I had a near-death experience and I saw the white light at the end of the corridor. Don't do it. That is the trap. Walk away from the white light. That is what you've been indoctrinated with. The white light is the trap. You go to the white light, you are zapped, your memory is partially removed, not always fully, but partially removed, and you return to another body. And, ooh, you've forgotten nearly everything, unless you're lucky enough to have a past life memory. What can you do about it? You have to evolve spiritually. You have to not accept the people who run the world as it stands, because they know the truth, and they're doing very nicely on it. I don't know how long it will take, but it's an injustice on humanity. And really and truly, knowledge is power. And I think that you have just got to evolve to a point where you just say no. Imagine if everybody in Britain on Tuesday morning didn't go to the petrol station to fill up. Imagine if everybody didn't pay their taxes. You actually have the power. And the only reason that they have the power is because you give them the power. I'm not being rude. I'm not trying to preach to you. That's the reality of it. But if everybody was of one mindset and refused to do something, that would bring them to the negotiating table.
How much time do we have for that?
2016 is the last point that they have to make a decision. 2016, they have a portal. They're not receiving any reinforcements, for want of a better word, at the moment. Okay, people will say the reptilians have all gone. No, they haven't, because if they'd all gone, you'd actually be a lot more freer than you are. But the time scale is 2016. Big changes by then.
Would you say that this is basically a prison that we've been
put in? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this is a prison planet. It's known as a prison planet.
For our previous crimes?
No, not for your previous crimes. No, right. Right, that's a very, very incisive question. There are a number of people on this planet who most definitely belong in a prison. Now, don't make a joke about it. I'm talking about, as a proportion, we have more paedophiles, murderers, than any other planet anywhere. There's a reason for that. Because it is a dumping ground, just as Britain used Australia to put its convicts. So this planet is used as a dumping ground. And that's why there's such a huge jump between nice people and bad people. And you know what? You can walk into a doctor's surgery and you can look at the people and you think, I don't like him. I don't like him. Ooh, don't like them. But you don't know why. But there's something inside you tells you that. Go with that. That's your natural reaction. You're a good person. It is a prison planet, but you have no right to be prisoners. You have the right to choose where you go. And unfortunately, these people are not allowing that. Any more questions?
How do we wake everybody up?
This is a good start. Remember at the beginning I said to you, this is one piece of the jigsaw to add to others. I do my best. I tour the country, I give talks, in my own time I receive people from all over the world who have been badly abused when they were children, and I do my best to put them back together again, and as I say, I do not pay for that. You just have to act in unison. You have to start being a little bit more, why? Why do you want me to do that? Why is that right? I tell you what really annoys me, YouTube. Not YouTube, but on YouTube, somebody is being arrested falsely. What do people do? Get their camera out and film it. How disempowering is that? If I saw somebody being falsely arrested, I would drag the copper off him. I don't care. But what do they do? Because people are so controlled, they just film it. I'm going to film it and put it on YouTube. Well, they're not having to make the decision. Do I intervene or not? Now, if it's a genuine arrest and there's a reason for it, fine. But if someone's been beaten and that's inhuman, why film it? Get in there and stop it. If it was your own child, would you film it? This is the trouble with humanity. It is so well controlled. One more story. I know you desperately wanted to go, but one more story. It's the one I wanted to say earlier. Right. I was going to keep it for probe, but it'll do. Control. How we are all controlled. Antiques Roadshow. Have you all seen Antiques Roadshow? You know what it is. Okay. It's the show where people pretend to be interested about the history of their object and really they just want to know how much it's worth. Right? So this was a few months ago and this lady had some lovely dolls. Did anybody see the one where the woman had the dolls? Please say yes, somebody. Did you? Or are you just saying that to make me feel happy?
Right.
I don't remember Noddy. But I think they were just saying that to be nice to me. This woman had some very, very expensive dolls. And as always, there's a group of onlookers. So the man starts talking about the history of the doll and, you know, your person's going, yeah, yeah, get to the point, what are they worth? But you can't be rude. So she doesn't say that, but you know that's going through her mind. Anyway, one doll's worth 500, one doll's worth 600. They always leave the best one till last. Best one meaning best in terms of money. So we got to the last doll and the guy says, have you got any idea how much it's worth? And she genuinely says, no, I haven't, I don't know. So he said, well, if it was to be sold at auction in the right place, this doll would sell between 15,000 and 20,000 pounds. Now, the point of the story is that the 20 or so people behind spontaneously went, why are they clapping? Did they clap a doctor that saved somebody's life? Did they clap a nurse who saved someone's life? What about the guy who's a wheelie bin and he thinks, oh God, I've forgotten Mrs. Brown 50 houses down. I'll go back and do that. Did anybody clap? No. Why are they clapping? That woman's not going to give them any money. That's how controlled they are. Money is important. Why does a man who works in a bank selling stocks and futures earn more money than a nurse who saves lives? Why does humanity value somebody who makes millions of pounds for shareholders much more than a nurse? It's because life isn't valuable. People are nothing but things to be taxed. That's the reality of a prison planet, ladies and gentlemen. I think we need to go, don't we? Is that the fight time?
Please, yeah. Can I ask one?
Yeah, you're the thing. You should.
There appears to be a slow false flag event in progress, and that's the anthropological global warming, in my opinion.
Bullshit.
I'll probably get someone thrown at me out. I think they've run out of good quality terrorists. So they have the nice slow event, which is taking our time, it's taking up air time, it's taking our money. So that's my opinion. I won't be telling anybody anymore, but this is what I think. I'm going to do a little talk on this.
Okay. So it's not a question, it's just a statement, right? It's fine, okay. I don't want to cause you any aggro.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Listen, I just want to say thank you ever so much. You are a great bunch of people. You are very knowledgeable. What you're doing is right. Please learn, please study. Only believe yourselves. Think and ask yourself what is the right way to go. You are sovereign, you are yourselves. And it's very important that you keep that strength. Whatever happens in the future, believe your own truth. Thank you very much indeed.